Wild Ride.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is January 28th, 2026. And the top story this morning is the job market. We have had two stories in about like the last 16 hours or so detailing a mass layoffs, five-digit job cuts at both Amazon and UPS. And those two stories are somewhat related. First off, Amazon, they're laying off 16,000 people, mostly cubicle office dwellers, not the people working in the warehouse. Amazon is saying that this is all about trimming the bureaucracy. No real talking points about like replacing people with AI. There's other people who are desperate to spin that narrative. None of the talking points I saw from the company suggest this is AI job replacements, mainly just trimming the fat, if you will. Now, keep in mind, Amazon just finished laying off about 30,000 people starting in October of last year. So, you know, look at that, 46,000 layoffs over a span of about 4 months. They are chopping heads like crazy over at Amazon. And then UPS is another one announcing a second big round of job cuts. 30,000 people will be cut from UPS. This is after they laid off 48,000 people last year, 78,000 combined between these two announcements. Now, UPS is a little different, whereas Amazon has told people, you guys are out of here. You got 90 days to find another job at the company. Otherwise, good luck to you. UPS is saying we are going to attrit down, meaning as people retire or quit, we're just not going to replace them. So they're not actually going to call people in and say, thank you for your service. Here's a packet. Good luck to you. They're just going to, or at least the plan is to slowly whittle down over time. There's also talk about offering voluntary separation packages, i.e. we will pay you to quit. And typically when companies do that, it means if we don't get enough people to take it, we're just going to start firing people. We're just going to start laying you off. Now, these two stories combined, we're looking at about 46,000 job cuts between the two. That's not quite enough to get a 0.5% in unemployment increase. But, you know, we're sitting here about 4.4% unemployment, not really spiking, but grinding higher over the last 2 or 3 years. And the one thing that you have to be concerned with these announcements of big layoffs and with the lower K economy doing so poorly and the job market frozen like the housing market, right? It is freaking impossible to get a job out there today. And any of the data I've seen, anybody I've talked to, recent college grads do not have it well right now. You have to wonder about flows. And I hear this a lot about, you know, it's not about the narrative. It's not about the macro. It's all about the flows. And when people are talking about flows, they're talking about this passive investing bubble or this trend of passive investing. Every paycheck, every 2 weeks or every month, depending on how often you're paid, people buy stocks. They've got their 401k plan. They passively put money into it. That money gets put into mutual funds that gets spread across the whole market. There is a constant flow of money into the stock market from people working and paying into retirement plans. And likewise, there are flows out of the stock market as people are retired and they're drawing down on their savings, living them down. Now, that's fine as long as the flows line up. You know, if the more flow in than flow out, number go up. But what happens if those passive inflows start turning into passive outflows? Because when people lose their job, they tend to start dipping into their 401k to make ends meet. And we've actually seen hardship withdrawals from 401ks have been on the rise dramatically in the last few years. So this story about Amazon and UPS, in a vacuum, not enough to cause mayhem in stocks, but keep track of these. If you start seeing this over and over and over again, as you tend to do early in the year, big tech tends to cut people in the winter months. If enough of these add up, those flows could turn from passive in to passive out as people start living down their 401ks, dipping in, making hardship withdrawals. That could be a real risk for stocks here, even though they're sitting hovering around all-time highs. Now, also going on this morning, you didn't think we were going to get through the monologue without talking about the shiny today, did you? Gold, $5,300. I mean, what has it Has it been 4 days since we broke 5,000? When did we broke 5,000 on Friday, I think, after the stream. It's 4, maybe 5 days already at 5,300. I mean, we didn't even make a pit stop at 51 or 52. Just blew right through it here. Silver is having a very calm day. It's only up about $3 or $4. I mean, remember when that was a big move way in the distant past, like 6 months ago, where a $3 move in silver was huge? Well, silver's sitting around 114. At least it was when I hit the live button. For all I know, we're 120 in the 5 minutes I've been talking. Metals are just ripping here. Now, yesterday we talked an awful lot about what was going on with the dollar, how the Dixie, the DXY US dollar index was sitting right around 96.2, which is a critical support level that we've now hit three times over the last few months. And that if we break below that, down goes Frazier all the way into the high 80s. Well, we broke through that support yesterday. We broke through it pretty hard. We dipped as low as 95.5 on the DXY. Dollar weakened substantially again yesterday. We're back right about that level, retesting it from the underside now, in the process of breaking down here. And if the Dixie does break down meaningfully from this level around 96 and change, then guys, that is just rocket fuel for further moves to the upside for gold and silver here. I mean, it's been nutty to watch. It could go further, especially since Jim Cramer said he doesn't like silver. I mean, that's got $120 written all over it right there. Also, after the bell today, big news after the bell. We have got earnings from Microsoft, Meta, and Tesla all after the closing bell this morning or this afternoon. A paltry $6.6 trillion worth of market cap between those three companies alone reporting after the bell today. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how the market is going to react. AI CapEx will be front and center. Investors want to see returns from these AI investments. And then Forrest is saying, but you ain't got no returns from those investments, Lieutenant Dan. Yeah, we all know that. Will investors continue to tolerate their money being incinerated en masse? Or will they rebel against these companies for spending billions of dollars because the chatbots are going to be awesome? Trust me, bro. We'll see after the bell. Also, in AI bubble news, Alibaba, Tencent, and ByteDance have supposedly been given the all clear from the Chinese to go ahead and buy H200 GPUs that were previously banned with some strings attached. NVIDIA's up on this news this morning. We don't really know how much of this is going to translate into orders or not. Supposedly, the strings attached are significant, although this is all based on unconfirmed sources speaking on condition of anonymity from China. Take all that with a grain of salt. NVIDIA's up this morning. Full disclosure, I am short NVIDIA. We've got ASML is ripping on earnings. That is the maker of equipment that makes chips. ASML, big European outfit. They sell all the manufacturing equipment to Taiwan Semiconductor. They're doing pretty well. The guys that make the turbines in the windmills, they are doing well as well. They beat earnings. A lot of gas turbine sales offset by the windmills not doing so hot. And again, that's an AI bubble stock. The backlog for these natural gas turbines to power data centers is like 5 years long now. If you try to start building a power plant today, you might be lucky to have it up and running by the end of 2031. But don't worry, guys. Your electric bills aren't going to go up because chatbots. Trust me, bro. Just trust me. Also, we've got General Dynamics. That's a name that I own, is reporting this morning as well. Things that go boom continue to do well. Notably, General Dynamics, they own General Dynamics Electric Boat. That's making the Virginia-class and Columbia-class submarines. A lot of spending on ships and the Navy. No surprises there. Starbucks is ripping on their earnings as well. A lot of interesting stuff at Starbucks. Now, the narrative that's driving the stock right now is that they've got good, solid same-store sales growth. Revenue starting to trend in the right direction. Starbucks had a rough couple of years. They're starting to turn the ship around. But there's some asterisks in that data. They closed 165 stores. When you close stores, you close the poorly performing ones. So that's going to artificially make your other stores look better by inflating your same store sales numbers when really all you did was get rid of the losers. The better stores aren't actually doing any better. They're just not being dragged down. The curve isn't being dragged down by the poor performers. Also, Starbucks, 6 consecutive quarters of double-digit declines in profitability. They're spending a lot of money on revamping these stores and changing up their menu. It isn't translating into profits yet, but right now Starbucks is ripping on that same store sales number because people see a light at the end of the tunnel, which may or may not be a train. We'll just have to wait and see. Deutsche Bank just got raided by German police in a money laundering probe. That's fun. No other details than that, just that the cops in the windbreakers, which I don't know. What do the windbreakers say in German? I'm sure it's a couple of letters. But yeah, they kicked in the door and they're carrying out boxes and hard drives. So we'll see what comes out of that one. And an interesting story about Kia today. $2.3 billion hit from tariffs. Chinese EV competition is taking a bite out of Kia as well, in Europe notably. And they make cars for the lower K in our K-shaped economy. In other words, the 90% of people who aren't doing well. So there's a lot of macro stories intersecting in this Kia earnings this morning. We will talk about that one at the end of the show. But first, we must shrink my big melon of a head and see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every single business day. And that is some good wake-up juice this morning. All right, the S&P 500 is up 12 points or 0.18% higher. The Dow is down 45 points or 0.01% lower. Not sure what's dragging the Dow lower here. Yesterday, it was United Health. Maybe UNH is contributing to that again this morning. Let's just double check. Let's see what United Health is doing here, because that Dow strikes me as something of an outlier. UNH is up ahead of the open after falling almost 19% yesterday, or more than 19% yesterday. So it's not United Health dragging on the Dow. It's something else this morning. The NASDAQ, meanwhile, is higher by 180 points or 0.7%. Al Midnight Al, he is biting my feet once again. Try to concentrate while your cat mangles your foot. I double dog dare you. Anyway, stocks having a pretty good morning here. Again, a lot of things are going to move after the bell today. We got $6.6 trillion worth of big tech reporting and the Federal Reserve today, by the way, which everybody's kind of overlooking because nobody expects the Fed to do anything. But there's always a risk that Powell says a thing. We're going to print money. We're going to print less money. Markets will react either way. It's going to be a lot to talk about tomorrow morning, that's for sure. Meanwhile, the bond market looks like yields are higher this morning, meaning prices are lower. The 30-year Treasury, 4.862%. That is higher by almost 3 basis points. The 10-year is at 4.248. That's higher by 2.5 points. The 2-year is at 3.573, higher by almost 0.5 point. And the 1 month is lower by a fraction of a point at 3.690%. Looking over at Bitcoin, we're at $90,040, up about a grand from where we were yesterday. Bitcoin is now up modestly 3 days in a row after a little bit of a sell-off late over last weekend, down to about 86. Now back hovering around the 90,000 level. Has anybody else noticed that Bitcoin winter seems to be pretty mild so far? Did I just put a hex on it? I mean, this time last cycle, we were already talking about this massive waves of DeFi apps blowing up and shitcoins failing and you know, eventually culminating in FTX, which, you know, marked the bottom shortly after FTX collapsed. We haven't gotten any of that yet. So it's been a very mild Bitcoin winter now that I've jinxed it. Meanwhile, regular winter has been anything but mild. This winter freaking sucks. By the way, speaking of this winter, you'll be happy to know we found new homes for all of the chickens. My chicken run collapsed from the weight of the snow on top of it over the weekend, and so we had to find a new home for the birds. And the girls will be able to visit their flock because my daughter's best friend's parents took most of the birds to add to their flock, so the ladies didn't exactly have to say goodbye to their chickens. So a lot of you guys were concerned about the well-being of the chickens. I got a lot of emails over the last few days. They're all right. All right, looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are green across the board once again. Spot gold, 52.63. We are off the highs of the morning here. We hit a high of 5,311 for spot gold, but still up by 82 bucks or 1.6%. April COMEX gold futures are hovering right around 5,300 at the moment, 52.97 after hitting an intraday high of 53.44. Currently up by $176 or 3.4%. Silver is at $113, almost $114. hitting an intraday high for spot silver of 116.11, up $1.85 or 1.65% for spot. March COMEX silver futures at 113.97, up a measly $8 for March COMEX futures. Slow day for silver, only 7.5% higher. You know what? I like the shiny. Look, guys, we're only, what, $4 off our all-time high of 117 and change here? I mean, silver had a pretty brutal sell-off a few days ago, but we're already right back where we were after selling off $16 in 3 hours on Monday. We're already right back up there. It's been a wild ride. Hey, copper's up too, 1.3% higher for copper. Platinum is up 4.1% at $26.42. Palladium is up 7.8%, back above 2,000 for palladium. Crude oil's up 1.5%, 63.34 for March WTI futures. That's higher by about $1. Yeah, pretty crazy things going on in commodities. Now, here's a story. I don't know if this one is going to make Peter Schiff smile or Peter Schiff cringe, but how's this for like 2020's bingo? Tether is shaking up the gold market with a massive metal hoard. Who had Tether buying up gold by the ton on their 2020s bingo? This story is nutty. There are roughly 370,000 nuclear bunkers in Switzerland, a legacy of the Cold War, that are now rarely used. One of them, though, is a hive of activity. Every week, more than a ton of gold is hauled into the high-security vault owned by crypto giant Tether Holdings, which is now the world's largest known hoard of bullion outside of banks and nation states. All right. And I would say outside of banks, nation states, and ETFs. That's another big one there. But apparently Tether is like one of the biggest owners of gold in the world. Over the past year, Tether has quietly become one of the biggest players in the global gold market, the embodiment of a meeting of the crypto and gold worlds, whose shared distrust of government debt is a major factor behind the surge in prices to never before seen highs of $5,300 an ounce. It has rapidly stepped up its purchases, buying over 70 tons of gold over the course of the last year for its reserves and its own gold stablecoin, according to Bloomberg. That's according to Bloomberg's calculations. That's more than was reported by almost any single central bank. Only Poland, which has added 102 tons to its reserves, made larger declared purchases. It's also more than was bought by any but the three largest ETFs, which represents the collective activity of tens of thousands of individual traders and investors. 70 tons of gold has been bought by Tether in the last year. And just to put that in perspective, that's 70 tons. Tether is only a small part of the much larger rush from investors into gold, with central banks and ETF investors collectively buying more than 1,500 tons of the metal. That's over the last year. So, you know, that 1,500 tons is meant to make Tether's gold hoard look small, but that 1,500 tons is the cumulative buying of all the ETFs and central banks of the world over the last year. And Tether at 70 tons is actually a significant percentage of that. Tether owns a boatload of the shiny. And hey, maybe that's partially one reason why the gold chart looks like this. 52.65, it just keeps angling up. And look, we talked yesterday about gold and about the dollar. Well, looking at the DXY right now, 96.29, up by 54 basis points after getting demolished yesterday. So a little bit of upward pressure on the Dixie this morning. We're retesting that level. Let's zoom out on the chart and look at the dailies on the DXY. Now, this is important here because I am going to put a horizontal line right around 96.2. And you can kind of see that's the level we bottomed out at. We tested this level twice over the summer and then in the fall. And then yesterday we were talking about that level. We were sitting right on that line yesterday during the live stream. We broke down hard from that level, went as low as 95.5. Now we are catching a bounce. And if we zoom in, guys, we are sitting right at that line, retesting it from the lower side now. So it looks like that support has broken. We won't really know until we break one way or another from this level here. But again, I want to set this to weekly candles and reiterate those levels that we highlighted yesterday. I guess I can delete this little line here. If we break below this current level of roughly 96.2, the next support is not until 89 and change. So if we move from 96 to 89 on the DXY, that is going to be worth a couple hundred bucks higher in gold, all other things being equal, that is. And of course, if gold rallies a couple of hundred bucks, God knows what silver is going to do from here with all the volatility we've seen there. So watch the DXY. It's not my favorite data point in the world because it only measures a shitty fiat currency against other shitty fiat currencies. But a lower Dixie is rocket fuel for gold, and the Dixie looks ready to move lower in a big way here. All right, the main stories of the day, though, are job cuts. Amazon to cut 16,000 corporate positions to trim bureaucracy. Layoffs by the tens of thousands in big tech. Amazon is cutting 16,000 corporate jobs in a broad effort to remove layers of bureaucracy and increase ownership. I have no idea what that means. Becoming the latest company to target managers for layoffs in recent years. The tech firm will offer U.S.-based employees 90 days to search for a new role internally, as well as severance and other transition support, said Beth Galletti, Amazon Senior VP of People, the Senior Vice President of People Experience and Technology. What a job title that is. I'm the Senior VP of People Experience. Okay. We've been working to strengthen our organization by reducing layers, increasing ownership, and removing bureaucracy, said Galletti. She said it's not our plan to announce broad staff cuts every few months, even though that's exactly what the company has been doing every few months, but I digress. The reductions take Amazon's announced job cuts to 30,000 in 3 months after an initial wave in October. CEO Andy Jassy has repeatedly said he's determined to cut management layers that began to concern executives after a pandemic-era hiring binge. Last year, he also warned employees that AI will shrink the workforce as Amazon automates more of its operations. All right, so I guess we're firing managers. We hired too many of them. We're going to try to replace them with AI. So what? Your boss is going to be a chatbot? Is that what's going on? Is the chatbot going to take you out to lunch and talk about your career goals and ask you how the kids are and everything else, pretend to give a shit about your personal and private life before telling you you're going on a performance improvement plan? Okay. Maybe that's where Amazon's going with this. AI is going to do wonderful things, I'm told. While the company employed about 1.57 million people as of September 30th, most of them work in warehouses. The corporate workforce comprises about 350,000 personnel, meaning the latest cuts represent about 4.6% of that headcount. Job cuts at Amazon and job cuts at UPS. UPS to cut additional 30,000 jobs in Amazon Unwind and the turnaround plan. Now, this is interesting because the UPS job cuts are related to Amazon. We were just talking about Amazon job cuts. Well, remember, UPS used to deliver all the Amazon packages. And now Amazon packages are delivered instead of the brown trucks, it's the blue vans, you know, the ones that leave freaking tire marks in your grass every damn time or run over the little solar lights in your driveway and then take off without fixing it or anything. Yeah, those guys. That's why UPS is laying people off. United Parcel Service on Tuesday announced that it was planning to eliminate an additional 30,000 jobs this year as part of winding down its partnership with Amazon and a multi-year turnaround plan. CFO Brian Dykes said on a call with analysts Tuesday following the company's quarterly earnings release that UPS plans to reduce total operational hours by approximately 25 million associated with the Amazon decline. 25 million fewer paid hours of work. See also earlier discussion about flows in the market. In terms of variable costs, we expect to reduce operational positions by up to 30,000, Dykes said. This will be accomplished through attrition, and we expect to offer a second voluntary separation program for full-time drivers. So these are not layoffs, mind you. They're eliminating jobs, all right? If somebody quits, they're not going to replace them. And if not enough people quit, they'll pay people to quit. And then if that doesn't work, then they lay people off. UPS also said it has identified 24 buildings for closure in the first half of 2026, with additional closures possible later in the year. Last year, UPS closed 93 buildings. The company is also planning to further deploy automation across its network. The planned job cuts come after UPS eliminated 48,000 jobs last year, 34,000 of which were operational and 14,000 of which were management. The company had previously estimated those combined reductions to total around 20,000. So, they laid off more than twice as many people as they initially said last time. So this time around, they're saying 16,000. We'll see. An additional 30,000. So does this mean another 60 or 80,000 are coming? I guess we're just going to have to wait. Also, big news, after the closing bell today, there will be fireworks in markets, either red ones or green ones. We don't know yet. Microsoft and Meta earnings put a focus on payoffs from AI spending, or lack thereof, because nobody makes money in AI except for NVIDIA. Investors wondering about payoffs from the pile of cash being spent on artificial intelligence should get some clues when Microsoft and Meta post earnings after the close Wednesday. The tech giants are the first of corporate America's four biggest AI spenders to report with results, with Alphabet and Amazon due next week. This year alone, the quartet is expected to have about $505 billion in combined capital expenditures, up from roughly $366 billion estimated for 2025. That's according to data compiled by Bloomberg. As Wall Street grows increasingly concerned about the ability to generate profits from all this AI spending, the expenses are starting to be seen as potential risks for the high rollers. The fear is starting to show up in the stock prices. Microsoft shares have slumped 11% since the company's last reported earnings in October, while Meta is down 10%. The S&P 500, however, is up 1.3% over that same span. So they're going to spend another trillion or half a trillion, $505 billion between these companies in CapEx, for chips that they can't plug in because there's no power and there's no power getting built. They're trying, but wait until we get to GE Verona's earnings. You'll see how long they're going to have to wait for that power. So we'll see. Do investors rebel? This is a situation of you're screwed if you do, you're screwed if you don't, right? If you light more money on fire, well, you're lighting more money on fire. You're wasting more of your money. If you stop, this bubble bursts and your stocks go down anyway. Well, this is a mess of their own making. Have fun, big tech. Meanwhile, we've got China gives the nod to ByteDance, Alibaba, and Tencent to buy NVIDIA's H200 chips. That's according to this guy named Sources. I don't know if he's related to the people familiar with the matter. China has given the green light to three of its largest tech companies to buy NVIDIA's H200 AI chips. Four people familiar with the matter told Reuters, marking a shift in position as Beijing seeks to balance its AI needs against spurring domestic development. ByteDance and Tencent have been approved to purchase more. ByteDance, Alibaba, and Tencent, missed one, have been approved to purchase more than 400,000 H200 chips in total, with other firms now joining a queue for subsequent approvals, the sources said, speaking on condition of anonymity. The Chinese government is only granting approvals with conditions, and the sources said they were still being decided upon. A fifth source said that the licenses were too restrictive and customers were not yet converting the approvals to purchase orders. The regulatory nods were granted during NVIDIA's CEO Jensen Huang's visit to China this week. One of the sources said, every now and then, every couple of months, Jensen Huang goes to China. He kisses the ring. He tries to get favorable policy decision. And then he goes to Washington and does the same thing, playing both sides in a supposed arms race. That's kind of interesting. We don't know yet what the strings attached to this story are. The Chinese are going to have some kind of riders. Maybe it'll be for every H200 you buy, you have to buy so many Huawei chips to go with it, something like that. But for whatever reason, this fifth anonymous source says, so far, no big purchase orders from this. Right now, NVIDIA stock, though, it's a little bit higher here, up 1.25%, trading just above $190. Pretty much traded sideways for like the last 6 months here, up a little bit here. Full disclosure, guys, I am short NVIDIA. Also in AI bubble news, ASML stock surges on strong sales forecast for 2026. The people who make the stuff that makes the chips are doing really well. Semiconductor equipment giant ASML on Wednesday posted mixed results for the fourth quarter, but provided strong outlook for the current quarter and full year ahead. ASML stock rose on the news. The Dutch maker of advanced photolithography gear earned the equivalent of $8.78 a share on sales of $11.62 billion in December. Analysts were expecting $8.85 a share on $11.17 billion. So a slight earnings miss, but a revenue beat for ASML. but it's the guidance really that is driving things here. For the first quarter, ASML predicted sales of 8.55 billion euros. Based on the midpoint of its guidance, analysts were expecting modeling of 8.11 billion. So strong guidance here. They're forecasting sales of 36.5 billion euros, crushing estimates for 32.5. That strong guidance is moving ASML higher here. Plus, it disclosed a corporate reorganization to strengthen its focus on engineering and innovation. As a result, it plans to cut about 1,700 positions, more job cuts. That's funny. Mainly at the administrative level, it intends to add workers in engineering. ASML stock. Now, this is interesting. ASML stock was up more than 7.5% initially on this earnings release. Now it's only up 1.5%. I don't know if they said something on their earnings call or what, but those gains have virtually evaporated in the blink of an eye. Now up pretty much 1% here, $1,466 for ASML. So keep an eye on that one. Those gains are going away. Is this one going to close red here? Not really sure what's driving that. Maybe the earnings miss, but the strong guidance should be weighing more than that. All right, another stock that is affected by the AI bubble here, GE Vernova, forecast revenue above estimates on strong demand for power equipment. Oh, that's right. We built all these AI data centers, and now we're like, well, crap, how are we going to power them? Short answer, you can't, because the people who make gas turbines can't build them fast enough. And of course, God forbid you try to get a pipeline built in this country. Good luck with that. GE Vernova on Wednesday forecast annual revenue above Wall Street expectations, backed by strong sales of its gas turbines and storage equipment to power generation firms that are rushing to meet surging demand for electricity. Utilities are investing billions of dollars to upgrade capacity and grids due to insatiable demand for electricity from companies that are powering the artificial intelligence boom, benefiting companies such as GE Vernova. Orders in the last quarter rose 34% to $59.3 billion, with gas power equipment backlog and slot reservation agreements expanding to 83 gigawatts from 62 gigawatts previously. That's important there, that power equipment backlog and slot reservation. It takes years to get one of these turbines, guys, and the backlog was already 5 years long. And you can see it went from, what was it, from 62 gigawatts to 83 gigawatts. So just based on the wattage there alone, I would say the wait time has probably gone from 5 years to something closer to 7 years to get one of these gas turbines built, assuming it's a linear progression between gigawatts and how long it takes to build the things. CEO Scott Strassick said GE Vernova was entering 2026 with significant momentum, citing improving margins and strong demand across its power platform. The company expects 2026 revenue between $44 and $45 billion, higher than average estimates for just under $42. However, the wind segment remained a drag on results, posting a $598 million EBITDA loss in 2025. The company has been grappling with challenges in its offshore segment owing to turbine failures and project delays. The company expects wind revenue to fall by low double digits in 2026, with segment losses of about $400 million. Hey, remember all that talk about the energy transition? Oh, yeah, the energy transition steams ahead, and I kept saying the energy transition is fake. Well, here we have people waiting in line for, what, 7 years to get a gas turbine while wind projects are being delayed. That's right, there is no energy transition. But, you know, I'm sure Europe will throw a few more trillion euros at it anyway, just so they can say the right things at meetings. GE Vernova stock is actually down a little bit on this news here, a fraction of a percent, $691.96, off by about $2. Let's put that in context, though. The stock is up 110% over the last year. So a lot of that positivity already baked into the cake. But the fact that that backlog is growing by so many gigawatts there, that just goes to show you how long it's going to take to build the power for these data centers that are already up and running. And as Guy Adami pointed out in Risk Reversal Media yesterday on his podcast with Dan Nathan, there is a huge duration mismatch between the demand for power for AI and when that supply is going to arrive. In the meantime, either your electric bills are going to double or this AI bubble is going to burst. One of those two things has to happen. And as we head into this election season where affordability will be front and center in people's minds, I'm not sure the policy support is going to be there to keep this bubble afloat. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Also, earnings. Wow, I got tongue-tied there. Also, in the earnings front this morning, General Dynamics, fourth quarter revenue rises on strong defense business. Full disclosure, I own shares in General Dynamics. General Dynamics posted a rise in fourth quarter revenue on Wednesday, driven by growth in its combat and marine system segments. As geopolitical uncertainty and global conflicts continues to buoy demand for arms and ammunition during the quarter, General Dynamics' marine business benefited from improving supply chain conditions and support from government investments in the Columbia and Virginia-class nuclear-powered submarine programs. The combat system segment, which manufactures combat vehicles, weapon systems, and munitions, also benefited from growing international demand, especially in Europe. The defense giant posted quarterly revenue of $14.38 billion compared with $13.34 billion a year ago. Things that go boom continue to do well. Now, General Dynamics stock, interesting here, sold off quite a bit at the open, off 3.8% here, down $13 to $352. But let's put that in context as well. The stock is up 35, almost 36% over the last year here. So it looks like maybe some of that positivity already baked into the cake, maybe a little bit of disappointment in the forward guidance as well. General Dynamics stock off by about 4% this morning. Meanwhile, we've got Starbucks appears to be turning the ship around, but it's got a long way to go. Starbucks sales accelerate and sign the turnaround is gaining steam. Starbucks posted growth in key sales metrics for a second consecutive quarter, adding to the coffee chain's momentum and showing CEO Brian Nichols' turnaround efforts are gaining traction. Global sales at established locations rose 4% in the most recent quarter, the company said in a statement Wednesday. That topped the average analyst expectations and built on positive results from the previous period that followed a lengthy slump. 4% same-store sales is excellent, but not mentioned in this article is the fact that Starbucks closed 165 stores in the same quarter. So when you close those stores, your worst performers drop out of your average same-store sales performance. So that skews the number higher. It's possible that number is just being manipulated by store closures. A second consecutive quarter of same-store sales growth reinforces that Nichols' project is generating results. The massive undertaking, Starbucks operates tens of thousands of locations across 80 countries, has focused on improving service and speed while reducing menu complexity. The company is also working to make its stores more inviting so customers linger and order more. Last quarter, adjusted earnings fell by 56 cents per share, primarily due to labor costs associated with the chain's turnaround and an increase in the cost of coffee. Earnings have now fallen by double-digit percentage for six straight quarters. All right, so a lot of talk about the turnaround, gaining traction. Things are going well. Six consecutive quarters of double-digit declines in profit. Remember, at the end of the day, the point is to make a profit. And if your profits are shrinking by double digits quarter after quarter, you got problems. Same-store sales looking good. Maybe the turnaround is in progress, but they better start showing something for it. The company will need to sustain stronger sales traffic in the second half of 2026 to improve profitability and justify the significant investment costs, Jefferies analyst Andy Barish wrote in a note to clients ahead of the results. But Starbucks stock doing pretty good this morning. Now that off the highs, it was up more than 7% this morning. Now it's trading pretty much at $100, even up $4 or pretty much 4.5% higher. Good morning for Starbucks, but off the highs. Also going on this morning, guys, we have got Deutsche Bank searched by German police in money laundering probe. There are no details provided here. This article only mentions some prior investigations. All we know is the guys busted into Deutsche Bank and started hauling away stuff this morning. So we'll probably have more to say about this one in the future. But for now, Deutsche Bank stock is down 1.2%, trading at $39.83 a share. And last but not least, we'll go through this one pretty quick too. There's a lot of interesting macro stories overlapping in this Kia story here. Kia says U.S. tariffs cost $2.3 billion last year as profit drops. Kia said U.S. tariffs cost it 3.3 trillion won or $2.3 billion last year, and the South Korean automaker will roll out incentives to boost sales as competition intensifies. Tariffs totaled about 1 trillion won in the fourth quarter alone, Kia said, driving a 32% slump in operating profit from a year earlier to 1.8 trillion won. That missed analyst estimates by 1.9 trillion won and came despite the company reporting its highest ever fourth quarter revenue on strong demand for electric and hybrid cars. So this is interesting here, a 32% slump in profits because of this $2.3 billion hit from tariffs. This goes to show you the lower K autos, right? Kia, hardly a high-end car. Kia predominantly markets to lower-income consumers. They can't just pass on the cost of tariffs. And so a 32% decline in profit as those tariffs eat into profit margins. We expected to see some of that. Dollar for dollar, tariffs doesn't necessarily mean higher prices because it's assuming that the consumer can absorb it and the lower K cannot absorb that. Let's see. This is also interesting here. While the South Korea and the U.S. reached a deal to lower import duties to 15% from 25% on November 1st, Kia didn't reap the full benefit because it had already paid the higher rate on inventory sitting in the U.S., said CFO Kim Song-jun during the conference call. So the tariffs have since gone down from 25 to 15%, but that's not reflected in these earnings because they had already paid the 25%. So the hit from tariffs will get smaller moving forward, but it's not going to disappear outright. And there's also a China angle to this story. Beyond tariffs, Kia is also facing an uncertain demand outlook as the EV transition slows in key markets like the U.S. and competition heats up with Chinese rivals that can offer more affordable cars in places like Europe. The company increased incentive spending in Europe 10% last year and plans a similar level this year to hit its target of 11% sales growth in the region, according to Kim. Kia's share of that market fell to 3.8% last year from 4.1%. There's a significant price gap with Chinese products, and in light of growing competition in Europe, we believe our growth strategy won't be effective without a coping mechanism, he said. Yikes. Coping mechanisms for competition with Chinese EVs taking a chunk out of Kia. So look, you got a lot going on in this Kia story. Chinese overcapacity flooding Europe with EVs that they built at a loss. The Chinese are dumping electric vehicles into the European market. That's hurting Kia's competitiveness. They're having to spend money to stay competitive there. You've got President Trump's tariffs taking a big chunk out of Kia's profits, $2.3 billion, in fact. While that number is expected to shrink because of trade deals, it's not going to go away entirely. And because Kia services lower income consumers, they can't just pass those costs on. A lot going on with these Kia earnings here this morning. This was a pretty interesting story. And I want to send a special thank you to my man Nacho Man says, wow, Jack, crazy prices. I think he meant to say, are we rich yet? I don't know if we're rich yet, but we're richer than we were. At least if you're stacking the shiny, you sure as heck are. I would also temper that enthusiasm a little bit. People are having a hard time selling their silver anywhere near these prices. A lot of coin shops, stories in the last couple of days of coin shops just saying, we're not buying. We can't buy. The refiners are taking too long to pay us. The wholesalers are taking too long to pay us. So it's nice to see those prices move higher, but it doesn't immediately translate into walk into the coin shop and trade and be rich. All right, it's another reason why I wouldn't mind seeing this thing trade sideways or maybe a slow diagonal for a little while. Let's let the market catch its breath. It's great to see these prices ripping and the mining stocks are going and the ETFs are going, and I still have one SLV call. I've been selling my SLV calls on the way up. I'm down to my last one. I've like 18x'd my money on that one. I just can't bring myself to sell that last lonely call option. I mean, it's nice to be on the right side of a vertical move, but it's not entirely healthy either. But in the meantime, just enjoy the ride, guys. Be careful with the leverage, though. Thank you, Nacho Man, for supporting the channel. Not rich yet, but we're getting there, brother. That is the goal, right? Hey, Snowman, thank you for gifting 20 Nobody Special Finance memberships. Welcome to the Melon Patch, you 20 new melon heads. Thank you so much, Snowman. Guys, remember, you get a free super chat once a month with that membership. So be sure and say thank you to Snowman. And then if you have any questions for me, use that super chat and I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. And it looks like we be doing some round tripping. And once again, Nacho Man taking his cues from the tech bros in Silicon Valley, round tripping revenue via Mish. He says, let's do some circulars, Mish. And here is Mish coming up right behind him with 20 more Nobody Special Finance memberships. The Melon Patch is a growing this morning. Thank you, Mitch. Mish. Sometimes it comes out Mitch. Thank you, Mish. Thank you, Nacho Man. I appreciate that, guys, very much. And here is Mr. Let's see, Joshua's World. Am I saying that one right? Joshua's World says Purge and USDCNH still lowering. Thoughts? I don't know what either of those things are. What is Purge besides a movie franchise that has had way too many sequels? USDCNH sounds like an exchange rate. What is that? What is CNH? Is that Canadian dollars? What is CNH currency? CNH is, oh, okay, the offshore renminbi. I'm used to seeing that as CNY or RMB. I didn't realize that. Okay, so I don't know about Purge. USDCNH still lowering. Look, the dollar is really weakening here. I don't follow the yuan as closely. Just watch that 96.2 level. That's the best I can say. I don't know what Purge is, so it sounds like a crypto to me. Watch that 96.2 level. That's very important. The U.S. dollar heading lower is going to put upward pressure on asset prices across the board, in particular commodities, within that particular, in particular precious metals. That's the big one to watch there. Watch that DXY at 96.2. A significant move lower from here is rocket fuel for asset prices. Thank you very much, Joshua's World. Sorry I didn't pick up right away on what the reference was there. Hunt and Cover, been a Melonhead for 23 months, says new members. Thank the Nacho Man and the Circular Mish. I'm Jack Gamble, and I approve this message. Thank you very much, Hunt and Cover, for your support as well. Welcome again to the new Melonheads. Spud Ruckus 7297, can you describe the ruckus? He says, seen reports, local metal shops struggling, no buying. I have seen these reports as well. They are increasing in number. Look, the coin dealers, the bullion dealers, the metal shops, they are strapped for liquidity right now. At least in most shops, the sellers still outnumber the buyers in physical bullion markets. A lot of OG stackers are cashing in at these prices. All right, so it's kind of interesting because right now, the COMEX is draining the stackers. I know like drain the COMEX is like the big narrative and the big story, but look at what's going on here. You've got physical stackers are selling small denomination rounds and bars. It's being sent to refiners, so much so that the refiners can't keep up with it. The refiners, what are they doing with it? They're melting it into 1,000-ounce good delivery bars to sell into the COMEX. So the flow of metal right now is from the stackers into the paper markets. I know that's going to make a lot of heads explode, but that's what's going on right now. Now, as that is going on, the coin dealers, they need cash. Right? When those customers come in to sell, a coin dealer, which is essentially a bank, mind you, the business model of a coin shop strongly resembles a bank. They need to have cash on hand to meet those withdrawals, to buy the metal that's coming in. And when their inventory builds up, they tend to dump it to the wholesalers or to the refiners. Well, it's taking forever to get paid by the wholesalers and the refiners right now because the refiners are backed up, which means those coin shops are struggling for cash. And a lot of them, they've already lowered their bid dramatically. A lot of them are turning away product. And that's not a decision that these coin shop owners arrive at lightly because they risk losing customers doing that. Even though metal prices have been going ballistic over the last year, the business models of those local coin shops are being stressed dramatically. A lot of them have dipped into their credit in order to keep buying as it comes in. And some of them just can't keep up with it anymore. So I tell you, it's been crazy, the dynamics going on in these markets while watching paper prices go vertical, watching this other stacker economy try to compensate for it and keep up with it has been pretty wild here. So look, it's not all unicorns and rainbows in the metals markets, although I'm sure the stupid chatbots that are largely being paid for by coin dealers make you think you better run out and buy because there's no inventory available. But the opposite is actually true. There's so much inventory coming in that the coin dealers, the bullion dealers are actually turning it away and underbidding it. Thank you very much for Spud Ruckus for supporting the channel, sir. Nacho Man 3086 says, you keep saying short on NVIDIA, Jack. What you mean, you trading it? I own puts in NVIDIA, several puts spread out across several expirations between now and the end of 2027. I've been short NVIDIA. Since when did I actually go short NVIDIA? It was like early December, end of November. The stock is like a dollar or two higher than it was when I took out my short position when I bought those puts. That's what I mean when I say I am short NVIDIA. Yep, I am standing in front of that train and betting it's going to stop. For the first 2.5 years or so, I covered this AI bubble. I didn't touch that trade. when I saw that story with Oracle last fall and the stupid remaining performance obligations, I saw how desperate they were getting to blow air into that bubble. I figured the time had come. So I am short NVIDIA. Thank you very much, Nacho Man. By the way, guys, that is an incredibly risky trade. I am betting the most rip-your-face-off rally in stocks in history is about to end. That is a very risky trade. Don't follow me into it. It's not what we do here. We don't recommend you take Jack's trades. Thank you, Nacho Man. Big Mouth Barry says, what if the Fed shocks and raises rates today? They won't. What if? If that happens, the market will freaking panic. But the Fed's not going to do that. Now, the Fed could shock markets by suggesting they're considering raising rates at some undetermined date in the future. That alone would be a huge shock to markets. But I don't think they're going to do that. I think the Fed is going to plant their feet. They're going to make all kinds of stupid political comments. The press will tee them up. What do you say to President Trump threatening your independence and all this other bullshit? It doesn't matter. The Fed is cutting. The Fed is lowering. They're going to take no action today. They're not going to move rates. They'll probably suggest that they need to see more data before they move rates again. The important thing, though, what about that $40 billion a month in Treasury bill purchases? What about that QE that they're calling reserve management purchases, RMPs? Yeah, it's money printing. What about the money printing? Are they going to keep doing it? I'd like to know about that. But I expect today's Fed to be a non-event, Barry. Thank you very much for supporting the channel. Snowman, with 20 more Nobody Special Finance memberships. Thank you, you frosty SOB, you. Thank you so much, Snowman, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that. Welcome to the Melon Heads. A lot of new baby melons today. Jolly Lollipop 1 says, in a surprise move, Trump will appoint the relative unknown Nobody Special as Fed head. Yeah, don't threaten me with a good time. Yep, I am going to print a couple of $1 billion a year, and I will deposit it directly into the Treasury Fund of the People's Republic of Jakistan, you know, for your own good. Yep, that's, you know, just to help the little guy, I'm going to print a few trillion and give it to myself. Why not? Seems to work for the other guys. See, also Cantillon effect. I'm going to get me close to that money printer. He says, change is required, Trump said. Yep, Trump stated. Sure, why not? Yep. I don't hold your breath on that one, Jolly Lollipop. I've heard a number of names are in the running, but I'm yet to hear my own. I don't know. Yeah, I'll take the job. I'll print some money and give it to myself. But other than that, why would I want that job? No, thank you. Thank you, Jolly Lolly, for the laugh. Uncle Fedster said, Hard Assets Alliance says it will pay $110.65 for my ASEs. $110.65. Let's see what we're at right now. Spot is at $114. So that's like $350 back of spot, which, by the way, $350 back of spot to me seems insanely low, yet it's about as good as I've seen anywhere else recently. $350 back of spot. And it's just amazing to me that American Silver Eagles, that you can't even get spot for them right now. By the way, guys, if you're trying to move metal right now, I know the prices look good. This is not the time to be selling ASEs here. I mean, a couple of years ago, the premiums on ASEs were $20 over spot if you were buying, 12 to 13 over if you were selling. So selling for 3.5 back of spot just seems nutty to me here. I mean, even spot price is going to do what it's going to do, and then premiums are going to do what they're going to do, and they move independent of each other. Just based on premiums, if you can move your generic stuff right now, if you must take profits, it's better to take profits in the generics, even though you probably get even less. Probably if you're going to get 3.5 back a spot for ASEs, you'll probably be lucky to get 5 back a spot for the generic stuff. But I just can't see myself parting with Silver Eagles for less than spot. That just seems nutty to me. But you can still get them for pretty cheap. Thank you, Uncle Fenster, for supporting the channel, sir. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads. Fireworks after the bell today. We got the Fed and we got big tech earnings. We will have plenty to talk about tomorrow. So I will see you then. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. Thank you so much, everybody, for the generosity in the super chats. I appreciate that, as well as you magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys for supporting the channel. Links down below to all that good stuff, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.